Welcome, friends. Welcome back to ArtCast. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, bringing you yet another interesting guest here on ArtCast. And, you know, that's what I try to do, is try to find people who have interesting things to say. Well, my guest today is Udi Dahan, and he's a guy that's known as the software simplest. And Udi and I have been chatting on email and talking about some very interesting concepts around web services and service-oriented architecture and how the intersection of workflow comes in with these things. Anyway, it's some really great stuff. And so I said, Udi, you've got to come on my show and tell the world about this. So Udi said, no problem, let's do it. So here he is talking about autonomous services. Let's welcome Udi Dahan. Udi, I'm wondering, you know, why do you call yourself the software simplest?
Well, it sort of came as a result of trying to find the right role for myself after being a developer, tester, integrator, architect, program manager, project manager, and so on and so on. All those roles sort of fused into one, and I tried finding a role for myself or a name that would sort of put all those things together into one nice short little word. And what I came up with was the software simplest, because the role that I play in almost every project that I'm in is to take complexity out and make things simple. And in that way, actually giving the project a fighting chance of succeeding.
Okay, well, I like that. And simple is good. We want to be simple because you're right. Complexity is a killer of projects. But today we're going to talk about a concept that, well, maybe takes us in the other direction a little bit. I don't know. Maybe you can help me find a simple way to do it. As you know, Microsoft has been talking about service-oriented architecture. And we have these famous four tenets of service orientation. And tenet two says that services are autonomous. Now, this has been a hard one for people to understand. And you had written something in your blog. And, of course, I'll post a link to your blog entry about this, about the difficulty in finding out what did we really mean by autonomous services. So tell me about what your thoughts are on autonomous services.
Well, like I said in my blog post, the first time that I saw that tenet, I was blown away. I thought Microsoft was totally pushing the envelope forward by saying, you know, services are autonomous equals autonomous services equals autonomous computing. And for a while I was pushing that forwards until after talking to a number of people that actually came up with the tenet, they said, no, we didn't really mean to go so far as to say autonomous computing. We meant more along the lines of the teams that were developing various services should be autonomous. Each team could operate on its own. And that ties into the whole share contract and schema, not class and type. And I was a little bit dismayed by that. But then they said, well, that's service orientation. On the other end, we've still got the architecture side of it, which is sort of the other part of it that says autonomous services, which is services that are as much as possible independent of each other.
Okay, so, you know, I think it helps a little bit to think about autonomous for a moment and what we mean when we say that something's autonomous. You know, I suppose that from one perspective, maybe I'm like an autonomous service for Microsoft, right? I'm sort of here and I can do things on my own. I guess autonomous to me means that, you know, something that can function pretty much on its own, right? You can let it loose and it does its thing. I'm sure there are some requests that I depend on others for, and if you were to ask me to do them, I'd say, "Oh, well, I'll have to ask another service here at Microsoft to do that for you." Is that kind of the way you see it?
Very much so. I see services translating to distinct entities that have that their existence is dependent upon themselves more than anything else. And this sort of gets into the architecture and the business side together, which is probably one of the big things that has created a lot of the buzz around SOA and a lot of the confusion, that two businesses, even though they may be cooperating, are independent of each other. Each one is registered separately. It has its own checks and balances and income and expenses. And while they may send each other orders, each one stands on its own. And when we're designing our services, we want to go in the same direction. We want these loosely coupled things that may work together or may not work together, but each one stands on its own.
While you were speaking there, I looked up the definition of autonomous in the Encarta dictionary. Being a good Microsoft employee, I had to do that. And so what I found is autonomous as it's an adjective that has three definitions. Self-governing, something is autonomous when it's able to choose, able to make decisions and act on them as a free and independent moral agent. Or third, self-sufficient, existing, reacting, or developing as an independent self-regulating organism. So I think that's an interesting way to think about it. I remember from the early days of ComPlus that we would have people calling us saying, you know, my web server is returning these errors, these server busy errors, because the mainframe happens to be a little bit busy right now. And as you looked at the thread counts on the web server, you would see that the thread pool had filled up with queued requests. And so then you would go, well, what is it waiting on? So you'd go over to the service, the ComPlus object. And then you would see, oh, the ComPlus objects are queued up as well. And the RPCSS process would have its thread, its queue full of queued requests for outbound calls to the mainframe. So what you had is sort of this chain of very synchronous connections between services, and because they were all very synchronous and tightly coupled, if anything went wrong anywhere in the chain, the whole thing fails. And so that's, to me, sort of the antithesis of autonomous services. What do you think?
Well, I think you hit the nail right on the head. It's the issue of tight coupling is in the tenets of service orientation. It deals a lot with the development aspects of it, while the other side of it, which is really autonomy and autonomous services, deals with the runtime aspects as well. And in this case, you see that every link of the chain, while it may be loosely coupled development-wise, you know, we developed our ComPlus component separately and the ASP site separately, and everything's based on schema and not type. You had this tight coupling in time, which the synchronous RPC-style communication brought you to. And there was really no way to get around it, because everybody was just actively waiting for everybody else. And there was really no way to sort of break the tight coupling in time. And that's one of the main differences that I think that the service-oriented architecture brings to the table when you look at autonomous services, is that you can no longer perform synchronous communication between services. Part of it is exactly what you mentioned about latency, that even if the service is there, it may take it a while to answer you. And when you have the other side of it, when you're talking about the self-governing aspects of autonomy, what if the mainframe was brought down for some reason? Would the entire website just screech to a halt with no way of actually going around the mainframe or going to a different mainframe? So the way that you describe it as synchronous communication, yes, I totally agree. That is one of the main things that we have to get around between services.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that some of the people who replied to your blog were a little bit taken aback at your comment that request reply synchronous RPC style calls, even with web services, don't really give you autonomy. And they said, well, you know, I can make a that kind of a call to a service like at Amazon.com. And though it's true, maybe from the client's perspective, I'm calling Amazon.com service. I guess, you know, behind the scenes at Amazon, though, they probably do a great deal of stuff in a very asynchronous fashion to be scalable. And, you know, I look at Amazon as a big black box from the outside. I just call a service there and I get something back. But there's much more that has to be done from the service side as well, right?
The comment that was made about the Amazon or the eBay services being exposed over web services and in essence being a synchronous request-reply communication, the problem isn't really from the Amazon side because their service level agreement with you is incredibly low. They're saying, you know, you can make a call, but if your connectivity isn't any good, well, that request will be lost. And if you send us a call and we're under load, well, we're going to toss that request too. And for any number of reasons, if your communication is somewhat garbled, well, you know, we're just not going to handle that either. From the Amazon side of things, you know, they're doing just fine. They're entirely autonomous and they're probably doing asynchronous work on the back end. The question is, if you want to implement your own service and your service will be autonomous and you're performing communication with Amazon.com, how easy will it be for you to make your service autonomous when you're dependent on that synchronous communication? I mean, you get a request in some way and you want to go to the Amazon.com web service and perform a request there. You have to do some active polling mechanism to make sure that you're getting the response back in a certain period of time, and if it doesn't come back properly, then you'll resend it, and maybe you want to do that on a background thread, and maybe you want to put a queue in there so that you can handle all the failure cases. It makes it that much harder for you as a consumer of their service to be autonomous yourself.
In the case where everything's working properly, request response, you know, RPC style stuff is easy and simple. But if you have the case where you have to know that this message is sent, this message is received, everything happened in every case 100% of the time, then you can't just rely on that because there will be days when things are going wrong and then your server starts throwing errors, you know, and you look and you find an event log full of errors of messages that didn't happen. And if you don't have any way of recovering or retrying or redoing those things, you're in a very big mess.
Well, I guess that's probably one of the big things that we're seeing on a wide scale today is, while there may be a very large portion of communication that, you know, it can succeed or it cannot succeed, there are certain things that have to work. If my service receives a $100 billion order and I have to pass that along to my ERP system, I want to make sure that that order isn't getting lost. Now, if I start developing communications for those kinds of requests differently from all other requests, well, that's twice as much work that I have to do. So why not optimize for the worst case and then just benefit in the regular cases? Because working it the other way around is that much harder. You can't really patch on robustness to a system that wasn't designed for it.
You know, there are some patterns, and you mentioned a couple in your blog entry, but there's others. For helping to solve this problem. So, you know, if we say, well, synchronous request response RPC style web services is not good enough, what is? What are the options here?
Well, obviously the opposite end of synchronous means asynchronous. And when I say asynchronous, I don't mean, you know, put up a thread in the background and have it do synchronous request response, because we'll still have to deal with the failure cases then. We're talking about asynchronous communication patterns, which means I fire off a request and I have to remember, I have to actively store that I sent a request and that I'm waiting for a response for that. And then I'll go about my business and I keep on working and handling things. And then I'll get a message back from somewhere and I'll look at that message and I'll see, wow, it has a correlation identifier, which is one of the patterns. Let's see if I sent a message with this identifier, and I'll go look at my message store and I'll find that original request that I sent, and I'll have to understand from that original request what was my original intent. And then I can look at the response and understand, hey, the ERP system received my $100 billion order, and now I can continue on and send this order or the result of this order to my CRM system in the same asynchronous duplex, which is really the other style of two-way communication that is asynchronous. In this duplex conversation, you can really look at it a lot like email, when you send an email to somebody, you don't really know that they're there or what's going on, but you send it off and you continue on doing your work. A little while later, you see that Outlook flash and you open it up and you see, hey, wow, I got an email back. And Outlook already does that correlating between the message that was sent and the message that was received. And when you see that response, all of a sudden you say, hey, that's because Ron Jacob sent me something before, and now I can continue doing my work and possibly send out a whole bunch of other messages to other services. So it's really this loosely coupled world where the assumptions are gone. You no longer assume that the other end is there, that they're going to reply quickly, which means you have to do a lot more work on your own end. Remember that you sent a request so that when the response arrives, you'll know what to do with it. You can also take a look at timeouts, which sort of gets back to the service level agreement thing. If I need a response in a certain amount of time, there's obviously business logic that has to occur when I don't get a response back in that certain amount of time. So it gets you into a whole new style of thinking where everything is going along as messages in and messages out, and you have to actively remember and code for the cases where things don't work exactly as you expected.
Yeah, you know, that's the picture of email is perfect for thinking about this, because we don't, when we send email, we're not making the assumption that the other person is online at that moment and will instantly respond to the email. So I don't like send Udi an email and sit there and wait. I know Udi's going to answer this any second now, you know. And in fact, oftentimes, I don't know if this happens to you, but a lot of times in Microsoft, people are very busy. They get tons of email. And I'll send someone a note thinking, well, I really need to get a response from this person. And one of the features that I wish that Outlook would do automatically, maybe they'll do this in the future, but sometimes I send a message and at the same time I add a task. So I'll drag that sent message from my sent items folder to my task list, and I'll add a task to follow up with that person if I haven't had a response by, you know, Friday at 2 o'clock. And then Friday at 2 o'clock, I'll get a nice little alarm on my Outlook saying, you know, follow up with this person, but I have to remember to cancel that if they did respond to me. But otherwise, I found if I don't set that little reminder, I'll forget to follow up with them. And so then, you know, the whole thing falls apart. And this is exactly the kind of situation you're talking about there. The other product I think that would be really useful for doing this sort of thing is BizTalk Server. Now, a lot of people have been kind of leery of BizTalk Server and say, oh, I'm not sure I want to go learn all of that. But it provides a lot of solutions for exactly this kind of problem as an intelligent message broker with this storage capability for the messages and being able to do workflows related to messages and timeouts and that sort of thing.
Well, I've been following BizTalk Server for a number of years now. And the idea that BizTalk is a broker is fine for certain scenarios, but it really takes the logic that should be inside the service and pulls it out to this sort of no man's land between all the other services. The way that I view BizTalk in this new service-oriented world is having a BizTalk within the service as this is how I want to code up my own services, workflow, and message handling logic type of thing. And it's quite a bit different than how BizTalk is positioning itself in the market, which is quite interesting when you sort of see the market pulling it in different ways. But I really don't think that the idea of a broker that handles the message flows for everybody jives well with this idea of self-governing services. I would really like to be able to change the message routing and the message flow logic within my own service without touching anything that could in any way break any other services logic on their end.
BizTalk can certainly be used that way. I mean, right, think about it like just as pure server infrastructure. And, you know, let's imagine you write a web service, I write a web service, our services are autonomous. But maybe they're deployed on the same server infrastructure that's hosting the web server where they're deployed at. And certainly, you and I could be sharing a great deal of server infrastructure and capability, even though our services are independent and autonomous. And so with BizTalk's ability to expose an orchestration as a service, it could be an endpoint, and I can think about BizTalk as just a messaging infrastructure that we're sharing, even though our services are autonomous and independent of each other. Does that help?
It's the flip side of the same coin. It really depends what the problem you're solving is, because this whole idea about service-oriented architecture, it's really rather useless if we're not using it to solve a specific problem. And in 99% of the cases, as we know, the problem domain itself dictates how we're going to be solving it. So there are certain features that you say, yeah, you know, that's great, I'd really like to use it. There are other things that when I look at the orchestration, I say, you know, I want to see that inside a service. I want to see that as being... it may be that BizTalk is my endpoint, but I don't want anybody on the other end counting on that or developing specifically against this interface, knowing, hey, that's BizTalk on the other end. I can count on that. I can assume that it's going to behave in a certain way. So the idea of having a certain schema exposed by BizTalk, that's just fine. But I see it inside the service, not between services. And this idea of orchestration as not a global overarching broker that is coordinating everything between everybody, but rather from the services perspective, when I get this message, what am I going to do? Now, a service itself can be made up of a whole bunch of other system services and components and access to legacy systems, and BizTalk does that absolutely fantastically. It has all those message translation features in there, which really make it a boon for developing a service. Because as we know in the business landscape today, we do hardly any greenfield development. We've got all these legacy systems that we sort of want to bring them forwards, and we want to hook them together. And this idea of service-oriented architecture has to meet the road of the legacy systems in a decent way. In BizTalk, I see it as exactly bridging that gap. At the high level, we have these autonomous services that we know where each one is going to be and what the message exchange patterns are. And internally, each service, how it's going to be coordinating its own workflow with its own resources, I think BizTalk would be absolutely great in that sense.
I definitely agree. And I think, you know, you can put BizTalk as an infrastructure behind the, think about it logically, behind the boundary of your service. And yes, whoever's calling my service doesn't know what my service does. They don't need to know. I'm sitting behind a nice WSDL, nice clean interface, and whatever I do is up to me. But inside that, I think some of the things you talked about with autonomy make this a very profound choice, because obviously I'm going to need to persist messages because I'm going to need to have the ability to take a request and retry it and know what happened to it. I might want to have management tools that can help me with dealing with failures and tracking and monitoring of these things. It's a lot of infrastructure that BizTalk, of course, has built in. But for those people who say, I'm not sure, you know, that my situation warrants a solution of BizTalk, there are other options as well, right? Like the soon-to-be here, and actually, it's coming very, very soon for a go live and so forth. I'm not sure I can say that. But anyway, let me edit that out. Soon to be coming, Windows Workflow Foundation. And you had some interesting thoughts that we're going to talk in more detail on another RCast about. But why don't you just give me a little teaser about what you're thinking about how you could use Windows Workflow Foundation with an autonomous service?
Well, I guess you could really look at the Workflow Foundation as a BizTalk Lite without really all that message mapping type of things. Workflow deals with the abstract world of workflow, and workflow really becomes interesting when you're talking about long-running workflows, workflows that have people involved, workflows that have other systems involved. And you really need this sort of, you know, do some work, remember that you did that work, now wait for something else to happen. When that event occurs, you know, start up another action, run a little bit, do some logic, okay, save that, wait a little bit more. When I'm saying waiting, I'm not talking about actively waiting, but when the next event occurs, it's sort of like this wheel that you turn every single time that you get an event, and what you do in each turn of the wheel is rather different. So I see the Workflow Foundation as being, you know, just coming right in the nick of time, because we really needed something like that inside our services, where we thought, you know, BizTalk is a little bit too big here. And a really great example of that is client-side code. When you think about how you're going to be developing your clients, that these clients have to be talking to autonomous services. So they're going to have to do the whole asynchronous communication thing too. Well, you can't exactly deploy BizTalk server on every single workstation out there. But now that we're going to be getting it as a part of the operating system or in Vista and as a part of the .NET framework, you know, tomorrow or the day after, it's just, you know, the glove just fitting the hand, which is the need that is really going to be popping up once these autonomous services are out there and we're going to want clients to talk to them.
Well, I think that's going to be a fascinating discussion on a future ArtCast. And so we're going to do that in a day or two. We'll see. We'll get to that. And so thanks so much for you joining me today, Udi, on this discussion about autonomous services.
Thanks, Ron. It was great.
Udi Dahan, ladies and gentlemen. Udi, autonomous services guy and software simplest. I like that software simplest concept, you know? Things get so complicated, and sometimes we have to just bring the solution down to its simplest possible combination. And guys like Udi are great at helping us to do that, and helping us to think about service autonomy. And we have some more from Udi coming up on the next ArtCast, so stay tuned. We're going to be talking about how Workflow and the new Workflow Foundation can help us to build autonomous services. It's a fascinating concept, and you'll want to hear it here on ArtCast.